Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, if you live in Pennsylvania, your taxes are going up, way up in some cases. We'll find out what's driving the increases and how it might impact some county departments and services. It's Mental Wellness Month, dedicated to breaking the stigma associated with mental illness. We'll learn how Wayne County Human Services is bringing awareness to mental health disorders, breaking the stigma, and encouraging anyone to seek help. Are bioengineered foods a threat to our health and environment? Previously known as genetically modified foods, bioengineered foods have increasingly found their way into our supermarkets and onto our plates, but there are potential risks. We'll learn the truth about bioengineered foods. Plus, Classical Kit is here with news about an upcoming electric cello concert. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Several of President-elect Trump's cabinet nominees will appear in Senate confirmation hearings today. His choice for U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi is returning for a second day. Bondi claims the Justice Department has targeted Trump for years. She insists that if she is confirmed, she will not politicize the agency. Trump's choice to be Secretary of the Interior receives his hearing this morning. NPR's Jonathan Lambert reports former North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum is poised to play a key role in Trump's effort to boost fossil fuel production.
The Department of the Interior manages roughly one-fifth of the lands and waters of the United States. As secretary, Burgum would have significant influence over allowing oil and gas drilling on federal lands. Interior also oversees national parks and monuments, endangered species protections, and relations with federally recognized Native American tribes. Burgum's pro-drilling stance is clear from his record as governor of an oil-rich state, but his views on conservation issues are less well-known and could be the subject of questioning at the hearing. Burgum is largely expected to be confirmed. Jonathan Lambert, NPR News.
Israel's prime minister says his cabinet won't meet today to approve the proposed ceasefire with Hamas for Gaza. The Israeli leader says Hamas has created a last-minute crisis. He did not elaborate. Hamas released a statement online saying it supports the deal as announced yesterday by mediators. There has been some cautious optimism in neighboring Lebanon over a potential ceasefire. NPR's Emily Fang has more.
Celebratory gunfire erupted across Beirut from the city's Palestinian refugee camps when the ceasefire was made official. Najib Mikati, Lebanon's acting prime minister, said the ceasefire ended a, quote, bloody chapter. The ceasefire is big news in Lebanon because the country itself is deeply tied to the Israel-Palestinian conflict. At least a quarter of a million Palestinian refugees and their descendants currently live in Lebanon, and Hezbollah, the Iran-backed fighting group opposed to Israel, is also based in Lebanon.
NPR's Emily Fang reporting. President Biden has signed a sweeping executive order on cybersecurity. NPR's Jenna McLaughlin has more.
Ann Neuberger is President Biden's outgoing Deputy National Security Advisor for Cyber and Emerging Technology. She says the president's executive order on cybersecurity is aimed at securing critical infrastructure and making it easier to sanction the cybercriminals that target vital sectors, like water and power.
The goal is to make it costlier and harder for China, Russia, Iran, and ransomware criminals to hack.
The executive action also includes direction for developing artificial intelligence algorithms that will automatically hunt for vulnerabilities and suggest patches to help defend the energy sector. Neuberger said President-elect Trump's team did not directly consult in the executive order, as he hasn't named his cyber leadership team yet. Jenna McLaughlin, NPR News.
On Wall Street, the Dow is down 130 points. This is NPR. The Vatican says Pope Francis has sustained an injury to his right forearm. The Vatican says he had a fall in his residence but did not suffer any fractures. He's wearing a sling as a precaution. The Environmental Protection Agency is concerned about so-called forever chemicals in sewage sludge. As NPR's Ping Huang explains, the waste can cause various problems, including contaminating farms and forests.
Solid sewage waste is nutrient-rich, and it sometimes gets spread as industrial fertilizer. Before it's used, it gets treated to kill pathogens, but that doesn't help to remove PFAS, a group of chemicals known as forever chemicals, because they persist for a long time in nature. PFAS have been used for decades to water and stain-proof products, but the EPA says these chemicals could be causing cancer. Sludge is not commonly spread on farms, but when it is, it can pose a danger to farm families and others nearby. EPA says PFAS from the sludge can contaminate milk, eggs, beef, and vegetables, as well as drinking water and fish in nearby waterways. The EPA has published its concerns in a draft assessment. It's now open for public comment through mid-March. Ping Huang, NPR News.
The space company Blue Origin has successfully launched its first rocket into orbit. The New Glenn rocket launched overnight from Cape Canaveral. It carries an experimental payload. The rocket is exceptionally large. It's intended to carry very heavy payloads aloft. Blue Origin mission managers hope to recover the rocket's first booster stage, but say it was lost in the launch. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Americans United for Separation of Church and State. For more than 75 years, AU has supported freedom without favor and equality without exception. Learn more at au.org/NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Updated property taxes went into effect January 1st across Northeast and Central Pennsylvania, and our NPR colleagues at WVIA are reporting that residents in 11 counties will see higher property taxes in 2025. For example, get this, Monroe County property owners face a 37% tax increase, the highest jump in the region. Taxpayers in eight counties avoided any increases in the new year, but some at the cost of county departments and services. Several commissioners told WVIA they stretched their county's cash flow by cutting jobs in the new year and taking on a more fiscally conservative budget. Isabella Weiss is the rural government reporter at WVIA in Northeast Pennsylvania. She reported on the tax hikes, and she joins us now. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me this morning.
Thanks for being here. And your article highlights these significant property tax increases across several counties in the region, including Pike, Lackawanna, and Wayne. What are the key factors you found that led to these hikes?
Yeah, so going into 2025, many counties are finding that they're at the end of their COVID-19 era funding. They're at the end of their ARPA funding. They're at the end of these funds that really help them get through that period. And frankly, a lot of them started to rely on, as many income sources were strained going into the pandemic. So when you look at, you know, in particular, I know you guys cover Wayne and Pike counties. Both of those counties took slight to moderate tax hikes. Wayne County has a 7.5% tax hike, while Pike has a 12% tax hike going into 2025. And for both of these counties, it's pretty much because, you know, they are seeing that they don't have that COVID-19 funding. They're starting to have to look towards other funding, especially looking towards their taxpayers.
And you mentioned the Pike County 12% tax increase, Wayne County 7.5% increase. The Pike County increase is above that 10% limit. Is that right? How does that work in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, so specifically for Pike County residents, if you live in Pike County, for every $10,000 in assessed value for your home, you would owe about $279 and some change more every year. So it's not the hugest jump, but it is significant, and that definitely can affect what families have to, you know, families and homeowners have to pay going into 2025.
Lackawanna County, where Scranton, Dixon City, Carbondale are located, faced a particularly contentious reassessment. It seems like the commissioners got some backlash for those tax increases. What were some of the more notable reactions from residents in Lackawanna and other counties that you found?
Yeah, so for Lackawanna County in particular, that was all covered by our reporter, Boris Krauchenyuk. He's very familiar with that area, and he found that residents were, you know, very upset that they were going to be spending so much more money going into 2025, and he found it that the commissioners frankly just had to change their whole entire budget structure because they were relying on a lot of funds that they just didn't really have going anymore into 2025. Frankly, it was a lot more complicated of an issue than for Wayne and Pike County. They're going through a contentious reassessment as of right now. And also they found that they were starting 2024, or rather they had started 2024 with $18.5 million in unpaid bills and only around $6 million to cover them. So they have frankly, a whole other slew of issues that they're working through in 2025.
Yeah, that's quite a gap.
Yeah.
We mentioned that some counties avoided tax increases in the region by cutting jobs and services. What did the commissioners tell you that some of those services were, and has there been response from local residents in those counties or officials regarding those cuts?
Yeah, absolutely. Over in Bradford County, up in the northern tier, the commissioners, they were able to keep the millage rate the same, so keep taxes, property taxes the same. But however, they did cut down on many departments. I've been covering a lot with the Bradford County Library, which then ended up cutting by 30% its funds, although at one point they were planning on cutting it by actually half. And so residents have really come together and it put a lot of tension on the commissioners to try to keep these budgets, keep department budgets higher for those departments. But however, the commissioners, they pretty much stated that they had to cut those budgets or raise taxes. And that they found, or they felt for the most part, that families just can't take more property taxes. Although there was one commissioner who, his name is Zachary Gates, he's the lone Democrat on the board. He was actually pushing to raise taxes to avoid a startling tax hike in the future. But he was outvoted.
Several commissioners that you spoke to blamed previous budgets for their current deficits. How much of a factor do you think the prior financial management decisions are impacting this current situation?
Obviously it depends on the county, but across several of our counties, it seems like a pretty important factor, especially when you have newer boards coming in. And in a few of our counties, we have new commissioners coming in that came in at the start of 2024, and they felt that previous boards were using funds that frankly just don't exist in those counties. So you see that a lot with Lackawanna in particular, but there were a few other counties as well that talked about similar issues. I do also believe that that's just kind of a lot of, what it's like when whenever we have a new administration coming in, is that they're always trying to figure out, what did the previous administration do wrong and how can we do our job better? You saw that is also in Lycoming County as well, where they have a new fiscal director who pretty much stated to me over an email that she wants to make all the departments in the county more fiscally responsible, and that she felt that money was not being used wisely. So that's really kind of what you're seeing throughout.
From your reporting, do you think residents in Northeast Pennsylvania and Central Pennsylvania fully understand the impact on these increased taxes, how they'll be used, or do you think there's more need for some transparency from these local governments?
Oh, absolutely. People need more transparency. Taxes are incredibly confusing. This is personally my first time writing a story like this. I'm a young reporter myself, so I had to also do a lot of research to really understand, how property taxes work and how did they affect families across the region. And it's incredibly confusing. A millage rate, it doesn't make sense. It's not something that they teach us in school. So that's really something that I think commissioners and fiscal directors and our local officials just need to do a better job making sense of. Because the average Joe just doesn't have the time to understand what a millage rate is, how it may or may not affect their property taxes. A few of these counties are going into reassessments where they reassess the value of your home, and those reassessments around, a third of properties will be assessed actually around the same level as they are. A third of properties will see higher dues, and actually a third will see lower. So that's also very confusing as well for, just the average person who frankly is not working with, creating these budgets. So yes,
No, go ahead.
I just believe that our local governments need to do a better job informing people as to what's going on and making sense of the numbers.
I live in New York, and I find the Pennsylvania tax system incredibly confusing. So I can imagine if someone who lives there who may kind of still understand it a little bit, it still can be somewhat complex. And there, as you said, there should be some more transparency from local governments to explain what's going on. You mentioned some reassessments. Are these hikes final, or is there some recourse here? Are there some other reassessments going on?
Yeah, so one of the counties I spoke to in particular was talking about how they were doing, they were raising taxes this year as kind of a preemptive measure. I believe it was, it might have been at Northumberland, if I remember off the top of my head, mm-hmm. but a few of these counties were trying to use their reassessments as to kind of, oh, it was actually Schuylkill, sorry, I don't remember the county. They actually said that they rose taxes in part to make it that in the future they wouldn't necessarily see as much of a tax hike. So a lot of these counties were trying to raise taxes before a reassessment came out and would probably change the county system.
Looking ahead, you mentioned that Lone Democrat on the commission, the county commissioners in Bradford, who said we should raise the taxes now so we don't get sticker shock later. That didn't work for him. But do you think these tax increases can influence local elections or have broader political consequences for the commissioners involved, especially in counties where maybe even in Wayne and Pike, where those increases were somewhat more moderate?
I mean, of course it can. I mean, whenever... You know, I remember, I don't know about you, but just covering the 2024 election in November, I mean, you speak to pretty much anyone on the street and ask them, you know, what was on their mind. And it was the cost of grocery prices. It was the cost of, you know, their homes. It was the cost of these things that we need to survive. So I really think that, frankly, any tax increase could be measure going into any future election. That is what it's on people's minds. People are struggling. Families are struggling. And so honestly, in Bradford County, I understand the two Republican commissioners on the board, Doug McGlinko and Daryl Miller, who were defending their budget and, you know, were arguing to not raise any taxes for 2025. They talked about how raising taxes would disproportionately hurt seniors and working families in the county. And so I really think that that will be major going into any future decisions for voters.
Well, and that could be, you know, take the election out of it and politics out of it. That's a long-term impact on local residents, local economies.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And how do you think
absolutely.
Go ahead. How do you think that some smaller counties or counties with a smaller population, they're large, like Wayne, but they're going to have to navigate these hikes and shifts in funding and these impacts?
Yeah, I think with a lot of these counties, I mean, residents are going to have to navigate, you know, obviously creating new budgets for themselves and their families. Counties, frankly, are... You know, especially the ones with larger hikes like Monroe County, which had a 37% increase, as you mentioned before. Those counties and residents living in them are going to have to try to understand, you know, what costs were you willing or were you not willing to cut and that you were willing to put on me and my own family? So I know in Monroe County, in part, it is because former commissioners decided to revamp the county's courthouse. And, you know, that has been a major expanse that's now wrapping up and that courthouse should be completed rather soon. But, you know, if you're paying a lot more money on your home, I mean, are you going to be happy necessarily about a larger courthouse, even if it is needed for the county's, you know, to run its court system, for the county to have room for its police system? You might hold resentment, depending. So I think that some residents might struggle with that.
Isabella Weiss is the rural government reporter for our NPR colleagues at WVIA in Northeast Pennsylvania. She reported on some pretty big tax hikes in Northeast Pennsylvania and Central Pennsylvania. You can read her reporting at WVIA.org. Isabella, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Yes, thank you so much. Really happy to be here.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn more about Mental Wellness Month in Wayne County, speaking of Wayne County, and how they're addressing the stigma of mental health and mental illness. This is Radio Chatskill.
This year on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, an exploration of his legacy and the ongoing project of forging an equitable society. Join us for WNYC's annual MLK Day special with the Apollo Theater. Guests include Rashad Robinson of Color of Change, Christina Greer, professor of political science, and Mike Madrid, host of the Latino Vote podcast.
Monday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
This week on This American Life, Sejuna's 29, never had a boyfriend, and she has a theory about why. And then she meets somebody who tells her she doesn't know what she's talking about. She needs to rethink the entire thing from the ground up. What she tells her, and can you change your whole life in one conversation? We find out this week.
Saturday at 6 on Radio Catskill.
How we make sense of the news and the world keeps changing. Who to trust and what's real are other moving targets. Let On the Media be your guide.
Saturday afternoon at 4.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's Mental Wellness Month, dedicated to breaking the stigma associated with mental illness. Dave Hartung is the Integrated Services Specialist with Wayne County Human Services, and he's joining us now to discuss Mental Health Wellness Month and how Wayne County Human Services is bringing awareness to mental health disorders, breaking the stigma, and encouraging anyone to seek help under their system of care umbrella. He also has a few mental wellness resolutions for the new year. Hi, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on today.
Thank you for being here. And can you just explain how we define mental wellness and why, you know, it's important to focus on mental wellness during this time of year?
Yeah, so we always look at mental wellness as a little bit more of a holistic approach than, say, just mental health. So wellness incorporating sort of many dimensions of life. And that's why, you know, some of the things that we want to talk about here today, as SAMHSA, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, they define 8 dimensions of wellness, and sort of taking it from just a purely mental health view to how does your overall well-being affect, you know, your mental health and your outlook and your overall ability to stay positive and healthy.
Could you talk a little bit more about that concept? It's the system of care, basically. It's a framework to help support a more holistic approach to mental wellness. Is that right?
Yeah. So system of care is a philosophy in itself of how care should be delivered, particularly focusing on the child serving systems. However, as we've learned through our system of care, through years of using a system of care approach in Wayne County, that all of our families are sort of tied through all of our services, regardless of, you know, when we say child serving systems, but we also incorporate our drug and alcohol services, our aging services, our transportation, our pantry. And so all of these are necessary, right? All of these areas of life are necessary if we are going to be healthy and well moving forward. Some of the ways in system of care, some of the principles that we try to adhere to encourage mental wellness is we empower youth and we empower families to take an active part, not only in their treatment, but in their pursuit of mental wellness. We encourage collaboration and try to get them in touch with resources and also social supports, because having a strong social network is a vital part of having mental wellness. And we also try to be – so sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
There was just a couple of other things that we try to make sure that we are sensitive and to cultural differences and to that we're competent in those areas, and we also try to be trauma-informed, because having an awareness of how traumas in our life impact our behaviors and our attitudes is important to understanding why people might do the things that they do.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds like what you're saying is that there's this more aware collaboration between or of different organizations, professionals, family members, folks who are receiving that care, to be a more coordinated and effective support system for maybe folks struggling with mental health issues.
Absolutely. Because there's a, you know, it's almost like if one of these supports, one of these pillars, if you will, fall, then there can be sort of a domino effect that could occur, because it's hard to be positive, to focus on mental wellness if, say, you know, if you don't have transportation that can get you to work, and then if you can't get to work, then you don't have the financial resources to make sure that your food and housing and all of that is taken care of. So, you know, you can see how all of those things go together to impact how you feel about yourself, how you feel about life, how you feel about your community.
And this approach ensures that some services are tailored to meet these unique needs of individuals, it sounds like, too.
Yes. And so collaboration is the key between all of our agencies and all of our providers, and trying to make sure that nobody falls through the cracks, so to speak. So that way we know where services sort of end in one place and can be picked up in another, and making sure that nobody feels, part of it is that they don't even feel like they are being, you know, they feel heard, and that they don't feel like they're being left out or forgotten about. But then, you know, the actual part of it too is delivering those services in a way that they can continue to focus on, whether it be their treatment or their mental wellness or social aspects of life that are important in terms of their relationships and being healthy overall.
In January for Mental Wellness Month, are there specific initiatives or events or advice that you're just giving people to make sure that you're raising awareness about mental wellness, and then the resources available through Wayne County Human Services?
Sure. And some of these, I just was looking on the internet the other day, and, you know, with it being January and folks make resolutions to lead a more healthy or fulfilling life in the year moving forward. And so some of these things are we've done throughout Wayne County Human Services or encouraged through Wayne County System of Care. But the first one that came across here is to practice mindfulness. And mindfulness simply is just being fully present in every moment. So a big part of that in today's culture is that we, you know, between our technology, the amount of screen time, right, we're on demand 24/7 with our cell phones, mobile apps, all of that. So it's to being able to take some time, you know, recognize how you're feeling, recognize the things around you, kind of slow down life for a moment, to recognize how your body is feeling, how things around you are working. So just sort of helps to kind of recenter every so often. You can focus on some breathing. There's some sort of meditation techniques that sort of go into mindfulness, but it doesn't have to be anything that deep. It's really about taking some time to yourself, kind of unplugging, if you will, and really taking a step back so that you're aware of yourself, your surroundings, your relationships. The second one is embrace gratitude. Some folks take it as far as making a gratitude journal, or some people might, you know, we incorporate it, of course, around Thanksgiving time, and like we might go around that time and talk about what we're grateful for or thankful for. But it's something that we can do moving forward in the new year is, you know, really look around. I was reading something the other day that, you know, 95% or even more of that of the, you know, human population throughout history never had the luxury of a hot shower. So, you know, every morning that you take a hot shower, just realize that the majority of humans that have ever existed on the planet, over 90% of them, never had that luxury. So just something like simple like that, to be grateful for the things that we have every day. The third one is to volunteer. And oftentimes, you know, again, with being grateful, but it's also a way to give back to your community, but it's also a way to stay plugged into your community so that you feel connected, you feel that you have purpose. And all of those things are significant to having positive mental wellness.
Did you have a couple more?
I had two more.
Go ahead.
And
these are helpful.
If you will allow. So the number four is to ask for help when you need it. So it sounds like a simple thing, but let's face it, right? It's a lot easier to tell somebody that they should seek help or that they might need help than it is to admit to yourself, not only admit to yourself that you need help, but to actually ask for it, right? Because it can be a pretty humbling thing, and a lot of us have a lot of pride and want to be self-reliant and resilient. But you can also realize that part of resilience is being able to recognize, hey, you know what? I can't figure this all out on my own. I need some help, and to be able to, go out there and ask for some help. And that's part of what we do. A big part of what I do here at Wayne County Human Services and big part of what we do in general in human services and social services is to put people in touch with resources that can help them. And number five is another one that's, I feel like, very important, especially today, because, as I talked about earlier, you know, we're all plugged in, and another way that we're plugged in is most people have some form of social media. And even if you don't, there's plenty of stuff on the news or just on television shows or whatever. But number five is stop comparing yourself to others. And, the saying that, comparison is the thief of joy. And there's a lot of truth to that, right? Like you're living your own life. Your path is no one else's. So especially when it comes to social media or things like that, you're seeing somebody else's highlights of their life. You're seeing something that, they're not showing you all of their downs, all of their, the ugly parts of their life or their struggles on the day-to-day basis that we all have. And so trying to compare yourself to somebody else, we don't know their backstory. You don't know, all of the things that are going on in their life. So focusing on yourself, what you can control, and how you can try to make each day better for you and the people around you.
It's all good advice, no matter the month or any time of year. Dave, if folks wanted to get in touch with you or Wayne County Human Services to seek help or just get more information, where can they go?
So to get in touch with me directly, I mean, you could call the courthouse number, which is 570-253-5970, and I am extension 3103. If they're looking particularly for mental health or behavioral health, the Office of Wayne County Behavioral Health is 570-253-9200.
And there's also...
Or they can always go on WayneCountyPA.gov.
Just going to say that. You got it in, too. Also, I want to mention that you guys also have PA211, the free confidential service that connects individuals to all kinds of services for their needs. Dave Hartung is the Integrated Services Specialist with Wayne County Human Services. We've been talking about Mental Wellness Month. Dave, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for having me on the show.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the truth about bioengineered foods. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York, a newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org, and listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Donna Fellenberg here, host of Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. My guest this week is the writer from Yulin, New York, Busy Coy. Join us to hear Busy talk about her evolution from performer to writer, the making of her cartoons that appear in The New Yorker, and she'll read a humorous piece called I'm More Than a Mother this Saturday, January 18th at 10:30 on Catskill Character on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Bioengineered foods, previously known as genetically modified foods, often touted as a solution to global hunger and agricultural challenges, have increasingly found their way into our supermarkets and onto our plates. However, beneath the promise of these foods, there is a host of potential risk to both human health and the environment. Nutrition coach Linda Pinckney is speaking about the truth about bioengineered foods at the Honesdale Public Library coming up soon. I've got to get the date, January 22nd, and she's joining us now. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Tim. How you doing?
I'm good, except a little rocky on that introduction. But so why don't you tell us a little bit more about what bioengineered foods are and how they differ from regular foods?
Sure. And, you know, just at first look, it can be really difficult to tell the difference. Some of the ways that you can tell is to check the little produce lookup code that's on the sticker, on the package, or on their bag, and sometimes on the fruit themselves. It used to be, now they've changed this recently also, it used to be that if it was a five-digit number that started with eight, it was bioengineered. You could tell right away. But now it's just a lot different. They have changed the rules so that you only have to disclose the bioengineering if you can test it in the lab and find out that, yes, in fact, it has a specific patented gene sequence in it. So just at first look, it can be very deceiving.
So how have you seen the impact of bioengineered and processed foods on people's health? And why do you think it's important for people to be more informed about these potential health risks?
Oh, great question. Things like seed oils have been touted in the media for years and years now, that they're healthier than saturated fats from animals. And as time's gone by, we realize that it's absolutely not true, that those seed oils, for instance, it doesn't matter how organically they were grown, by the time they're processed, they're actually processed using hexane to thin out the oil from, say, your sunflower seeds or your canola seeds. Actually, it's called, the plant is rape seeds. They call it canola oil because it's from Canada, Canada oil. But they use hexane to separate the and liquid make the seed oils more liquid. And then a lot of heat and pressure is used to turn that then into a finer liquid, and then they have to burn off the hexane at the end. So they're really not good for you. Those oils are denatured, and they do more to clog your arteries than any grass-fed butter you will ever eat. So I try to let people know that a lot of the commercial claims that are being made are really not true at all.
During your upcoming talk at the Wayne County Public Library on January 22nd, I think I misspoke earlier and called it the Honesdale Public Library, but the Wayne County Public Library in Honesdale, you're going to be talking about these bioengineered foods, how to identify them. We talked a little bit just now about those labels, and a lot of people rely on food labels now, but they can still be confusing. Are there some common misconceptions people have when reading these food labels, and how do you think they can become more informed about identifying bioengineered foods?
You know, there's so many great phone applications now that you can just take into the grocery store and get a snapshot of the QR code and just see what's in it. Though Yuka is one of them. There are, I have a whole list of them. So for foods, there are things like Foodvisor, Open Food Facts. They do have both Android and Apple capabilities, so you can get them right on your phone and find out if this is something that, you know, is going to be good for you or not. And if you're looking for cosmetics and so forth, they have an app called Think Dirty, which, you know, the lower the number on your Think Dirty score, the better off your components are. And in Yuka, I think it's the higher number that you get, the more nutritious the food is. So it's really important to find the freshest, most local food that is the least processed that you can possibly find.
And in your talk, you're going to talk about these healthier food choices that you can make, simple steps. Are there other simple steps that folks can take and this, you know, more natural approach to food, less reliant on highly processed food?
Absolutely, because remember, your highly processed foods have additives to make them shelf-stable. So when you're looking for something that is going to be good for you, always go fresh. Even if it is bioengineered, sometimes the flavor is off, sometimes the texture is off, but generally it has a similar nutrition value so far, but these things change quite a lot. Just simple things like getting up in the morning and doing, some arm raises and some squats actually pushes anything that your body is trying to get out of your body. It will just help push that through in the morning. And actually, another a little bit off topic, but kind of on point, 10 squats every hour are better for you than 20 or 30 minutes of jogging, especially in this weather. Statistically proven. Science knows it. So sometimes less is more.
Right. We're talking mainly about human health impacts of bioengineered foods, healthier choices when you're confronting them. But there are some concerns about environmental impact of bioengineered foods, including deforestation, fertilizer applications. How do you think, I mean, if you're not addressing this in the talk, totally understood, but how do you think the growing popularity of bioengineered foods affect this broader conversation about environment, sustainability, and health?
It's a huge impact because we're losing acreage, thousands of acres every year to factory farms. And these factory farms are using a heavy amount of pesticides, commercially produced fertilizers that don't really help the soil, herbicides. So I don't know how much your audience understands commercial farms. They're required by USDA to buy the commercial fertilizers, which lead to soil depletion. The way the economic process works, they're forced to plant acres and acres of the same crop, and a monocrop sort of agricultural system does deplete the soil very heavily, regardless of whether you are using crop rotation or not. So it's very important to understand that those chemicals build up in the soil. They use the same soil year after year for the same crop, and what they do is they spray glyphosate on the nearly mature crop, the entire acreage of that planting, let it dry, cut it down, and ship it off. Now, that glyphosate we know as the as Roundup, and it's the commercial name Roundup, but the chemical does not wash off during any processing. Of course, they hull the grain or whatever, but there is still some that remains in the plant, and the plants themselves have been bioengineered to resist glyphosate. So the plant appears to be fine, but that glyphosate stays with the grain all the way through the baking process. It does not get destroyed. And the purpose for that in agriculture is to make sure that the crop is protected from insects and invasive weeds. But then on the other hand, you have to understand that once we ingest those breads and pastries and pastas, they go into our gut. And the gut biome is also made of little yeasts and microbes and sometimes plants, little plant-like organisms, and it kills them too. So it's really no secret, or it should not be a surprise to people, that we are raising a generation of children with severe food allergies and behavioral problems and difficulty digesting certain foods, because a lot of these chemicals build up and they're not, especially a children's sensitive growing system cannot process them properly. And in adults then, of course, we're also seeing, on the other hand, women with hormonal changes and a very difficult time, with their cycles and so forth. So there are very broad implications on many levels when we're using these chemicals in a monoculture sort of agriculture system like ours in this country.
I know listeners are concerned about chemicals, sustainability, environment, health, and wellness. So hopefully they will be able to join you for your talk coming up Wednesday, January 22nd at the Wayne County Public Library in Honesdale. It's The Truth About Bioengineered Foods. We've been talking to Linda Pinckney, a nutrition coach, and she'll be leading this this approach to maybe getting folks to transform their eating and health at this this talk with your information. Thank you so much, Linda, for joining us today.
Thank you, Tim. Yes, definitely join us on the 22nd at 4 o'clock.
And there's more information at waynelibraries.org. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Classical Kit is here with a news about an electric cello concert. We'll find out more. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. And this week, we are diving into soup season. The weather demands it. And we've got fantastic soups from Colombia, Haiti, and China that will warm you right up and give you a reason to have a party. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Callison Stratton, a singer-songwriter, public historian, and host of Liberation Station here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Liberation Station is a show that highlights the work of female and femme-presenting performers across genre and time. It's my little way of balancing the scales of representation on the radio. Join me for Liberation Station every Saturday evening at 7 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Classical Kit is here with some news about some classical music in the area during the winter months. An electric cello concert at the Ellenville Public Library. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, the cello is said to have the same range as the human voice.
Oh.
Now, not the range of my singing voice, but if you went to an opera, from the lowest of the male singers to the highest of the female singers. So, suitably, Alex Prusgintis has a program called A Night at the Opera coming up.
Good morning, Alex.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming back. We're always glad to talk to you. And this sounds great. Kit, go ahead.
Yeah, so Alex, I know that opera transcriptions are really popular for cellists because of that, what I mentioned about the range and how much it is like the human voice. So could you tell us a little bit about the program you're going to be presenting in Ellenville?
Yes, and you said it quite perfectly about how the range of the voice translates very well, especially in those tenor ranges to the cello. And in the goal of A Night at the Opera, which I should mention is one of the newest of now the more than 12 programs I offer on my electric cello under the banner of Uber Eats, delivering food for the soul. We like to expand the genre of opera, much like we like to expand the limits of the cello. So those attending will hear some opera classics, such as Mozart's Queen of the Night aria or Donizetti's Una Furtiva Lagrima, and we'll also perhaps go a little bit on the boundaries of opera, perhaps seeing how opera mixes with Broadway and selections like Old Man River or Mack the Knife, and in one case is even showing the cross between opera and rock and roll with Pinball Wizard from the rock opera Tommy.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful range of things you're going to be presenting, and I know that you have a talent for segueing from one to another and giving the audience a sense of you know, where these musical ideas are coming from. So this sounds like it'll be a great program. And are you going to be contrasting some of these classics with things from jazz or whatever in the ways that you present them?
Yes, absolutely. So this is a good way also to touch in about some perhaps little details about the electric cello I use. The cello itself is a true classical instrument. In fact, it's about a circa 1900 cello that I use, made in East Germany. But I use a lot of electronics to augment and amplify it. And in particular, there are two important pieces. One is a looping station. Looping stations are quite common among bands over the last 20 years, which allow essentially the, you might say, transition or even simplification of a complex band into essentially a one-man band. And the looping station I use, in particular a Boss RC300, allows me to have three main tracks I can record over myself and become even more complicated with that. So that's one tool I use, the looping station. And then I also have a pedal board of 5 to 6 different guitar effect pedals. And this is where, as you said quite well, I get to contrast the more general theme of a classical cello with themes of jazz and rock and roll. And in some cases, I can delay the sound of the cello, create almost a reverberation. I have, of course, a distortion pedal giving it that real rock and roll hard grind. I even have, though, I don't think I'll be using it much in this particular case, but in some of my other popular shows like the British Invasion, I have a wah-wah pedal indicative of 1960s and 70s rock and roll bands.
So, you know, I have attended one of your concerts before, and I can attest to how interesting all that technology, you know, what it brings to the concert. And the concert, A Night at the Opera, is going to be at the Ellenville Public Library, and that's this coming Saturday, day after tomorrow, the 18th, from 1 to 3. And I know with these libraries, they don't always have the biggest space, so if our listeners go to eplm.org, they can find the calendar and they can register to make sure there's a spot for them at this concert. They can also call the library at 845-647-5530 for any information or directions they might need. But I wanted to mention that you're also going to be at the Monticello Library on February 3rd at 6 p.m. And I think that's a concert where we might hear a little bit more, perhaps, of that wah-wah pedal, because
it most definitely is, yes.
Yeah, so that concert is Bach to Blues and Jazz.
Correct.
And so we only have just a few more minutes, but if you could just let us know what the main focus is. Is in just a couple minutes of that one.
You know, what I always like to think of is Bach being one of the original jazz artists of his time. And I've always felt with, in particular, the 6 unaccompanied cello suites that Bach wrote, they're almost best plays with a rather jazzy improvised quality. And so we like to explore those. Particularly, one of my favorites to perform that with is the prelude to suite number 2 in D minor. It's a little bit different from the other preludes of Bach's unaccompanied suites. It has a more freestyled quality. It's not as rigid. It's not as set in motion. And from there, from the suite number 2 in D minor, we begin to explore particularly selections from the Jazz Ambassadors. These were jazz musicians from the U.S. that during the 50s and 60s traveled behind the Iron Curtain. So these will range from individuals like Dave Brubeck to Benny Goodman, Miles Davis in some cases, also Louis Armstrong. And then touching on those connections into the blues, which can allow the blues to also tie in with rock and roll, with a few selections from the Animals as well as Led Zeppelin.
Well, yes, and I have heard that program, and I can attest that it's very entertaining. And so that will be the first week in February, February 3rd, at the Ethelbert B. Crawford Library in Monticello. And people can find out about that on, I don't think I want to give the address for that because it's so similar to the Ellen
sure,
one. It's just going to be confusing, but check in with the
more letters.
With the, if you just Google Monticello Library, you'll get the information for that one. So, looking forward to these concerts, and thank you so much for joining us again today. We really appreciate.
Thank you as always for having me and helping to share the news.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Alex. Always making the music fun. You know, I haven't heard a classical cellist too many times talking about a wah-wah pedal, so that's cool. You've got some other events that are going on this month. What else is happening in the classical music scene?
Yes, so the Metropolitan Opera Live in HD is going to be back at SUNY Sullivan, and they're going to be there on the 25th of this month. And it's Aida. So that's a big one. That's a long one. You know, we did the Magic Flute and it was a short version of it. This is going to be with an intermission. So it's going to be 218 minutes. So be prepared for that. January 25th, they're starting a little earlier because of the length of the opera. It's at 12:30. So, I can tell you that their new sound system that they put in this year is fantastic.
SUNY's new sound system.
Yeah.
And just for folks who may not have experienced the Met Live, tell them a little bit about that. It's going on live down in Manhattan, but you don't have to drive to Manhattan to see it.
Right. Yes. This will be streamed. So one thing to know is it really does start on time.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a stream. It's not, you know, Magic Flute was a replay, but this is live. And one of the nice things is that during the intermission, they'll interview artists backstage, so which is also happening live. So it's an amazing experience to, you know, have that feeling of a big opera. They have a nice big screen without having to go into the city in this freezing weather.
No congestion pricing here. It's at SUNY Sullivan, just down the road from us here, College Road, specifically in Loch Sheldrick. There's more information at sunysullivan.edu. And the other great thing is, you know, being with other fellow classical and opera lovers in the area, too. Get to meet some other folks.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not sure if they pulled it together, but they were talking about trying to have some cookies or some little refreshments during the intermission for this show. Can't guarantee that, but I know they were working on that. So you can socialize a little bit, and especially if you go early. Actually, every seat is perfect, unlike when you go to the Opera House, which it isn't, because it's a greatly banked theater.
It has rake to it, yeah.
Yeah, so no matter where you sit, you're not blocked by the heads of the people in front of you, which is really great.
Let's remind folks again when it is and the timing and
yes.
The exact time to be there.
Okay, so it starts at 12:30, so I would recommend getting there early. It's a little bit of a hike from the parking lot, so maybe plan on arriving, you know, 5 after 12 or something. And that's January 25th.
And, you know, if they don't get that whole food situation organized, maybe see if Kit has a cookie in her pocket.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Thanks for keeping us on top of the classical music in the area, Classical Kit. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Reminder, tonight at 6, it's the local edition, followed by the daily here on Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org, and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
In 2017, President Trump took office with an inaugural address that spoke of American carnage. In 2021, President Biden took office calling to lower the temperature and the raging fires of politics. In 2025, Trump takes office a second time. What does he say? We'll hear it. I'm Steve Inskeep. Join us for live special coverage of Inauguration Day from NPR News.
Live special coverage starts Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, some thickening clouds and a little bit of snow this afternoon. We might see a coating to an inch, high of 22. Some clouds tonight, a low of 18. And tomorrow, not as cold, high 32. Low tomorrow night, 21. For the weekend, a bit of afternoon and evening snow on Saturday, high 30, low 21, cloudy 27 for Sunday. And then next week, we're getting into some really cold temperatures.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.